This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, BFM 89.9. I'm Khoo Sitrong with Wong Xiaoning and Philip C, and this is The Morning Run. In about 10 minutes, we'll talk to the epidemiologist, Dr. Moy Fung Ming, on what to expect as Malaysia moves into phase two of vaccinations. But before that, markets.
Yeah, in the US, we had a mixed day. I think with the blowback from Archegos, Dow was up 0.3%, S&P down 0.1%, NASDAQ down 0.6%. But across Asia-Pacific, all green actually. Hang Seng was up 0.01% marginally. Shanghai up 0.5%, Nikkei up 0.7%. And back home and in Singapore, both up 0.6%.
So to break down the markets for us, we've got Joe Quinlan, the Chief Market Strategist for the US Trust Bank of America Private Wealth Management. Joe, thank you for talking to us. Biden's $3 trillion Build Back Better program should provide a boost to infrastructure companies when it's unveiled later this week. Which other sectors are likely to be beneficiaries of this plan?
Well, I mean, first to step back, it's going to take a while to get this infrastructure program, you know, passed into law. Then it takes a while to get the money spent at the state and local level. So, you know, you got time to play this, but it's going to be the industrials, materials, capital machinery, heavy companies, equipment. So already you're seeing a little bit of a boost here, 5G, renewable, solar. It really cuts across a large swath, but, you know, be patient. Don't be the first one in because you're going to pay the most. But we do expect an infrastructure bill, but I think this is a story for the summer, not the spring, in terms of actually seeing it.
And, you know, Joe, I want to ask you about, you know, these unusual block trades that happened on Friday and some of it also happened yesterday. And I think, you know, that of course reminds us of the heightened volatility on the U.S. stock market. Do you think there will be some contagion effect on the rest of the markets? Of course, this is related to the Archegos issue scandal news. Is that how we want to say it?
Here's what we're talking to our clients. Be focused on the fundamentals. The U.S. economy is very strong because of the stimulus. We're worried about the deficits and the debt. We're going to get a good employment number on Friday. Then finally we get to earnings season, right? Early next week into April, we'll actually hear from the companies. I would just say, no, I don't think there's any contagion here. Look at the fundamentals. Stay in the good sectors, you know, the rotation value to value from growth. We still like technology long-term. And then the infrastructure plays. This is a long-term play out in the market. And we still like the emerging markets, too, as well. So like whether it's Malaysia, Taiwan, South Korea. So there's plenty of places for money to work.
But Joe, would you then avoid the banks, perhaps? Because we do know that some banks have exposure to this Archegos issue.
No, we're still overweight financials. You know, the big banks in the U.S., maybe a little bit. We've never been, we're just U.S.-centric when it comes to the financials. So I know there's some big European banks, some Japanese banks, and we haven't seen all the victims kind of bubble up just yet, but we don't see any systemic risk to this problem.
Joe, can I get your perspective on supply chain, especially on semiconductors? Because we're having a series of shortages, right? They've halted production for car makers like Stellantis in the US and NIO in China. You know, how long will this prolong?
Yeah, I think we're going to have to learn to live with it and live through it. Whether it's waiting for your truck or your car or your cell phone or paying more for it. And I do think it's a problem. It's going to take to come up with a semiconductor plant, it takes a lot of time. And so this is a problem that's going to kind of be with us until 22, 23. We'll work our way through it. But I just think, we got to prioritize whether it's the automobile industry, whether it's, smartphones, computers. So it's a major pressure point, but you know what happens when there's always a shortage, when lack of supply, then, too much demand, then the script kind of flips. And I think, by 22, 23, it'll be like too many semiconductors, not enough demand. So, it'll work its way out, but it's going to be an ongoing issue for the markets. And this is why the earnings season will be very interesting. How are companies dealing with this?
Yeah, Joe, a few minutes ago, you gave a few interesting and positive harbingers of the markets in the weeks ahead. You talked about probably a good jobs number this Friday. You talked about earnings season coming up. What kind of stocks should investors be considering adding their positions to ahead of what you expect will be a good earnings season?
Well, I mean, for your listeners, have that global exposure. I mean, I'm more U.S. biased versus Europe because the U.S. is just blowing. We're blowing past Europe when it comes to growth. But, maybe the valuations look better in, like, life sciences in Europe. But, to me, it'd be more, like I said, more the value trade still has a long ways to run. So does the reflation trade. So that's commodities, materials, industrial cyclicals. That still has a long ways to run. You know, we have such shortened, you know, attention spans that like after 2 weeks, we think the trade is over. No, it's not over. We think industrials, value, commodities have pretty good upside yet to go here. So if you don't have exposure, and then conversely, if you don't have the tech exposure, remember we talked a lot about this in this last summer. If you don't have a tech exposure, well, buy them now. Buy them on, you know, quote unquote discount. So you know, we'll keep fine tuning and rebalancing the portfolios.
But Joe, I want to ask you. I mean, rising inflation, of course, is a growing concern in the U.S. And we did see bond yields rise last night. So the question is, the normal relationship with gold seems to have broken down, though. So why hasn't gold prices actually also spiked?
That's a great question. I don't know the answer, to be honest with you. But I do think it's related to cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin, other. You know. Remember, we're in the green revolution, right? So metals are very much in demand, but it's silver, lithium, cobalt, it's copper. I mean, there's other places to put your money to work. So, I mean, gold continues to lose its luster, even in the face of inflationary pressures mounting, because I just think there's so much other demand for other materials, or base metals, whether it's, you know, precious metals, base metals. There's other ways to kind of give you liquidity and the upside return. So, you know, gold is never out of favor, but not right now. There's too much going on in terms of renewables, electrical vehicles, copper, and the cyclical upswing we're seeing in commodities.
Yeah, so Joe, you know, just coming, building back to your earlier point that you're not so optimistic about Europe, but you see a dual speed happening, right, with UK economy recovery a bit stronger compared to the EU. Would a good currency trade be a short of the euro and go long on the pound?
Yeah, I mean, I favor the pound over the euro, but I think that trade's getting a little stretched here. I mean, if the euro is sinking a little here, but that, you know, that'll come back at, you know, I think by say late second quarter. But you know, the UK is having a good, you know, 21 thus far. I mean, the vaccination rollout, their markets are tied to global trade. Global trade is picking up. Financials are starting to stir as well. So, you know, they got a lot of work to do. The UK, you know, they got to reset with the EU. They got to reset with the US, Asia, in terms of their trade and their economy. But I think the euro, you know, they're fumbling the vaccination, another lockdown. And, you know, to me, they're not moving aggressively enough with fiscal stimulus. So the euro is going to continue to weaken here. But maybe that's the time when you start buying. Remember, buy on weakness, not on strength.
All right, Joe, thanks so much for your time. That was Joe Quinlan, the Chief Market Strategist for the U.S. Trust, Bank of America Private Wealth Management. Now, obviously, he raised aspects about how he's still long banks, and specifically U.S. banks. But it's not been all rosy for the rest of the financial services. I mean, Nomura has been hit quite badly. Credit Suisse has been hit quite badly because they've got prime brokerage accounts with Archegos. And Archegos, of course, has basically seen their value plummet because of these swap based trades they did on Chinese.
I'm not sure they still
companies.
Exist anymore as of
they
yeah.
don't, yeah. Hmm. You know,
because
I mean,
it was
website,
like a complete wipeout, right? On
their
Monday,
website
on Friday
doesn't even,
and Monday.
Yeah, it's got this, you know.
I think they were saying, like Nomura was saying, that its profits could be wiped out for the second half of the financial year.
A whole year's financial earnings
right,
wiped
while,
out.
Correct. While Credit Suisse said on Monday that the wave of selling may have a highly significant and material impact on its first quarter results.
So this is quite interesting. Only in the sense that since long-term capital management has a hedge fund of their size been so devastated. But I like the fact that Joe has put it into a good context because the contagion effect has not rippled through. I think partly because it's such a big market now, it's so much liquidity, but also because it's been quite, in some ways, confined to a smaller universe of, say, for example, Chinese tech stocks, like the Tencent of this world.
Yeah, but I think I want to bring up a point, Chuang. It is not a hedge fund. This is actually a family-run office, okay, which is a new kind of
concept,
which has kind of emerged in the last 10 years. So it's typically like, let's say, the Guinness family. They were one of the first to run these family offices. So they took the wealth from, of course, Guinness, put it into a company, and they just manage usually their own money and sometimes maybe a few families, a few friends.
Yeah.
So they're not exactly a hedge fund. I think the family office practices somewhat hedge fund trading, but they're not technically a hedge fund. So that's where the gray area comes in because they don't come under the same regulations that apply to hedge funds.
Correct. And the similarity really extends because in terms of value, Archegos was by some quantum larger than Long Term Capital, which was like nearly 40 years ago.
But the question was, we heard that they built up quite a lot of share in Viacom, up to 15%.
Yeah.
So why CBS, was there no checks and balances there?
I think
because trades are invisible.
They also use derivatives rather than actually buy the stock. And I think what made the collapse of this particular Archegos interesting was that it brings into question, what kind of risk management did the practices or risk management was there at these different prime brokers? Because let's face it, I don't think Nomura knew what Credit Suisse was doing, and Credit Suisse didn't know what Morgan Stanley was doing, and Morgan Stanley clearly didn't know what Goldman Sachs was doing, because everybody operates in their own individual banking space, of course, and there's client secrecy. You're not supposed to exchange information as to who your clients are and what your clients are doing. It's only when I think when everything just kind of blew up that the banks realized, hey, we lend money, or we actually were prime brokers to this one individual company, and our exposure, you know, combined exposure on particular stocks became very high.
Yeah, I believe Goldman blew the whistle on this, and I think that's why it all precipitated.
Yeah, that's the other thing as well. Nomura and Credit Suisse will be treating Archegos as just another client. But then how far back does the KYC and onboarding happen, right? Because obviously, Archegos themselves, they use contracts for difference and swap trades to basically buy stock in these kind of... Then you also think about the potential ripple effects of such kind of practices, right? For example, eToro, which is like Robinhood but European. They offer their customers, you know, retail customers, positions in companies as diverse as Tesla and, you know, all the other stuff using contracts for difference. That's how they basically, you know, mirror those trades.
I'm quite interested to see the blowback when you do the parallel between GameStop and a retail individual investor and Archegos and the fact that it's affecting institutional investors. Just seeing how the response will look like between both.
That's what we don't know, because we don't know how deep those pools are, right? We don't know how many clients eToro does or Robinhood does until they go public, per se. And then we can really see, right?
Yeah, but there's always slightly different standards in the way that when you talk about Robinhood, you're talking about a lot of retail investors whose maybe knowledge is not as great as Archegos.
100%.
Archegos, whatever said and done, definitely will fall into the camp of what they deem as sophisticated investor. And then, you know, as a sophisticated investor, you know all the risks. You definitely do. You cannot say that you didn't know any better. But if you were Mr. Tan in some small town and you were doing trades yourself directly, your level of knowledge, and I'm sure there's some very clever Mr. Tans out there, but your average knowledge of the Mr. Tan would be very different from that of Archegos.
Exactly. So I'm quite keen to see what do regulators say about this, because the conversation now is all about, okay, the banks are going to tighten up, they're going to be more stringent of the KYC, but are the regulators going to intervene is a question mark for
so
me.
So far, the regulations are very quiet when it comes to family-run offices. So we'll find out whether there'll be any wider repercussions. And this is a conversation that we are going to have later on this morning at 7:30 with Pankaj, our regular, well, soon to be regular commentator, who's going to give us a 101 actually in terms of, you know, how we should look at these leverage trade and how opaque it really is. So do tune in. It's with Pankaj Kumar later on at 7:30 this morning.
Okay, we'll come back after this with vaccination phase 2 for Malaysia. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.